Okay, it's a gaggle of geese, a conclave of cardinals. Well, what do you know?
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, learn how to not write bad with blogger and author Ben Yagoda. Plus, we celebrate our birthday during the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who is a Puggle whisperer, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. I whisper to my Puggle all the time. Well, they finally got underway in Vatican City after Rand Paul gave up his filibuster. Talk about drones. That guy's number one. Physician, catheterize thyself, I say. Or do like Strom used to, you know, discreet use of the spittoons. You keep going for hours and hours. Okay, what about that conclave, though? Kind of funny they would start on a Saturday, being Shabbos and all, but still. God understands. Very democratic, the cardinals. They're cardinals of every hue, actually, at this conclave. 50 shades of cardinal. What hung things up for a while there, there are 115 cardinals, 114 name tags. More cardinal jokes to come, so you want to stay right where you are right now. Okay, let's see. Name tags, got that. Check, check. Cardinals versus ordinals, I thought that was... That sort of thing. There's some discussion of actually going to a COO instead of a Pope this year. More of a business approach, but P-O-O doesn't really scan. Okay. There was a small faction pushing for a People's Choice Pontiff. People's Choice Award for Pontiff. I think that's not a bad
reality TV.
Thank you very much for saying that. Was that related to this at all? Okay. They would have started the conclave sooner, but nobody wanted to miss the Real Housewives of Vatican City. So that's... Okay, I've got a little tentative smiley face on that one. And a little crinkly smiles on that one. Okay, I don't know. The conclave is a big deal, and we're all paying attention to it, so that's why. But where's all the attention for the Israel bond drives is what I want to know. Not nearly as much. In other news that isn't, North Korea's Kim Jong-un warns of a preemptive Mothra attack on the U.S. Mothra. Okay. Hopefully one of those tiny little sisters doing that singing that's so irritating before the attack. It's worse than the attack, really. The new feature film Kim Jong-un's tanks at the box office. In other news, so it's not punishment enough to have Osama bin Laden for a father-in-law? Okay. The president's dinner with the senator is a good first step, but we'll see how the dancing goes. Polar bear parts trade definitely the Canadian's dark side. Yeah, what do you do with them, eh? Do you know that about your fellow Canadians? Polar bear traders parts.
Arts
traders.
Seems wrong.
Seems wrong. At the NFL Combine, no more asking if you like girls. All you can say is, do these pads make me look fat? I think it's only proper to ask the center if he likes girls. And that's just a personal feeling. When the quarterback calls out blue 58, that means, do you like girls? That's right, what that means. All right, or do you like good music? That's another possibility. Girls, schmirls, what you don't want is an ankle tackler. That's all right. And further on, I have an uneasy feeling we'll see Hugh Jackman in a Hugo Chavez musical. Hugo! The Crayola people will preserve President Chavez. Crayola people. Yeah, same ones who did Kim Jong-il, you know, the old man. They do good work. The main effect of sequester so far is to cancel Romney's tour of the White House. So Occupy White House is out. Budget whiz Paulie Ryan says a universal no CPR would save billions. on anybody. No CPR on anybody. That's what we're looking here for. Cost savings. Plus you get the inheritances. You know, all that money they got doing nothing. Unless they give it to PBS, of course. So I guess the do not resuscitate retirement community is out for me. I don't know. I try, you know, I make an effort. You know, a lot of these retirement homes, actually, they're no CPR and no CPA. You don't get either one, so a little unusual. On Wall Street, the bulls rampage in our little China shop. Small knives are permitted on airliners, although with the TSA furloughs, we'll be seeing the occasional machete or Bowie knife get through. The only problem I see is if Crocodile Dundee flies coach. That could be the only problem I see. You see any problems? No, you don't see any problems. Oh, you can bring a hockey stick on board now, but not toothpaste. So if you can pick your teeth with a hockey stick, you're in business. Thank you, TSA. Time Warner accidentally spins off both Time and Warner. The Forbes billionaire list is out. The Koch brothers, who are tied at number 6, if they would share organs, they would collectively have more assets than number 1 Carlos Slim. So that's pretty exciting for Koch brothers fans. Silvio Berlusconi offered a year in prison or president of Italy. Global temperature is the highest in 4,000 years, but you've got to take the long view. There are some suggestions that Kraft mac and cheese is not fluorescent yellow orange by nature. Fox News head Roger Ailes says Joe Biden is dumb as an ashtray. But I have met an ashtray, and it is no Joe Biden. And finally, and I certainly mean that, Disney to use the original cast from Star Wars in Star Wars 7, even though Luke Skywalker now uses a walker. Carrie Fisher only fits in the Chewbacca outfit. And Harrison Ford will play Han's assisted living. That's all the news. That is not. Han's assisted living. See, Han Solo is now. Okay. All right. Okay, that's the run through. Now let's go through this again. And is the applause sign working? Is it? Oh, yeah, okay. Where's the laugh sign? I've asked him for a laugh sign for years now, and I have yet to get one. Ben Yagoda is a great guy, and he knows all about writing, and he teaches it there at Delaware, you know. He went to Yale, and he's written a lot of books. He knows everything, and he wrote this one, for example, How to Not Write Bad. What's wrong with that? Anyone? He's on the line with us now from Swarthmore, and hey, Ben, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk. Well, let's see. You know, that's preemptive.
Don't be presumptuous. Okay.
I only talked really to one. I talked to Kurt Vonnegut one time about writing.
Mm.
And he said, "Don't never use a semicolon."
Semicolon. Yes, I've seen that quote attributed to him.
Yes. Well, he said it right here among other places. I'm sure he said, "All it proves is that you went to college." That's what he said.
Well, you know, I have a line. I think. Something to the effect that when you have the urge to use a semicolon, lie down until it goes away.
Yeah.
Not lay down, but lie down.
Well, can we settle this once and for all? Is it ever proper to use a semicolon? In what situation, like defensively, could you use one if someone came at you with a colon?
Defensively?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how exactly that would work. Sometimes it's offensive. Yeah. But sure, it absolutely is. And I bet if you studied, and there's probably a PhD student doing that right now, and if not, here's an idea. Study the works of Vonnegut to find all the semicolon uses, and I bet you'll find quite a few.
Yeah.
It is okay. I mean, the basic rule is two situations. Number one, when you have a list of things that would otherwise be separated by commas, but within that list there is punctuation. In that case, you separate it with a semicolon.
So if there's a bunch of commas in your list, right?
Right.
Then you use
the
a semicolon.
Cities he visited were Boise. What state is Boise? In Idaho. Boise, Idaho. Boise, comma Idaho, semicolon. Schenectady, comma New York, semicolon.
Oh,
and
that way.
Such and such.
That's rather clumsy, though, isn't it?
It is a bit clumsy.
Yeah.
Correct, but clumsy, yeah.
It's correct, but is it advisable, Ben?
Well, if you
want to
give the list of the cities he visited,
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm opposed to it, just on principle.
Duly noted. and the second time is when you have a sentence that consists of two complete clauses. Could be sentences on their own. I was there, semicolon, she wasn't.
I was there, she wasn't.
That's okay.
Okay, yeah, no,
that
makes sense. I'll go with that. And it's so true in my life. Anyway, there's a lot of truth to it, so it deserves a semicolon.
Very sorry to hear that,
yeah. Yeah, well, it's all right, it happens. Yeah. Let me ask you this now, Ben. Nobody writes anymore, they blog. Right. I mean, people who might have written before and people who should never have written in the first place are now bloggers, right?
Well, that's pretty deep. I mean, how do you differentiate writing and blogging?
Blogging has no rules to it and nothing to say.
Okay.
Nothing being said in bad form with no, you know, it shouldn't be there.
Is just a no reason for its existence kind of deal.
Well, it's very democratic now. I mean, everybody can blog. Everyone can go to blog and, you know, I blog and it's terrible.
I'm not sure if I'd agree with that. I haven't read your blog, but I would be highly suspicious if it's terrible.
It's all been said.
What?
It's all been blogged before.
It's been blogged.
They should call it flogging. That's how bad it is.
Flog through the blog. Well, the big difference is the concept of gatekeepers. You know, previously, 20, 30, whatever years ago, to have anything published, anybody could write in their diary, Dear Diary or whatever, but to have it published and read by others, it would have to go through these gatekeepers, the editor of the New York Times, the editor of the New Yorker, the editor at Random House, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And as you say, that is just not the case. You can set up an account at Blogger or WordPress, and boom, you are out there and you've published yourself for the world to see.
That's right. You never see a job for a blogger editor.
That's right.
Blogger editor wanted.
No. And you know that's there's the good and the bad to that. It was extremely undemocratic before. Not that that's necessarily only a bad thing, but these gatekeepers were the rulers of the universe, and they weren't the greatest godlike people ever. And their word ruled. So there's some not so great stuff with that. But nowadays, the good thing is that, you know, I submit more people are writing, and it's in the form of blogs and product comments on Amazon.com and texting and all these other forms. But they are out there writing, which is kind of cool.
Not really, no.
And some of it...
Well, look at what they're saying, though. Come on, Ben.
What's that?
Look at what they're saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's
trash.
Look at people.
Half of it is trash.
Know?
Two-thirds.
Some are smart and some are not so smart.
I know. So where's the benefit in that?
Where is the benefit? I don't know. There's some good stuff being written out there, and especially in some of these special interest kind of blogs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you're really into video games, which I'm not, you'll find websites and blogs that some of them actually are edited and have gatekeepers of one sort or another, and it's really informed, funny, knowledgeable, good writing, in my opinion. The problem is that if you don't know about video games, it's totally lost to you. So the kind of general interest stuff is falling by the wayside a bit.
Yeah. So it's kind of a narrow casting sort of thing. I can see that. But now Twitter, for example, I'm addicted to Twitter now, and it's actually ruined my life. I cannot write a complete sentence anymore with a subject and a verb and an object and a period after it, you know,
using capital
letters in the right. I mean, if you have 140 characters, I only need personally about 17 to 20 characters.
That's it. Yeah, we should have a new service instead of Twitter. It'll be Twit. It's even shorter than Twitter.
Thank you very much, Ben, for that endorsement.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that as an endorsement on my site from now on. Should be Twit.
I tweet from at B. Yagoda, and I think I'm the only person on Twitter who only writes in complete sentences with subjects and verbs. So I'm going a little bit against the grain there.
You do? Do you use capital letters?
Capital. Everything is proper. I can get maybe one sentence in there per tweet, but it's a real sentence. So I.
Well, don't you get people really trashing you for using capital letters? I mean, I did that when I started. You know. Like for names, I'd put the capital, you know, M and Michael or something, and people trashed me. Bad etiquette or something.
Your followers are a little judgmental, it sounds like.
Yes, they do have torches, a lot of my followers. That's a little upsetting.
The one time I've been admonished for anything I've done, that comes to mind on the social media stuff is my 22-year-old daughter, Maria. she texts, and people of that age, you know, text and younger, and I'm older than that. But it's a useful form of communication. You know, when are you going to get there? I'll meet you at the bus, and so on. And at one time, after this has been going on for a while, she said, "Dad, don't put a period after a sentence when you're texting. It makes you look sarcastic." Like, what do you mean? She said, "Well, I'll see you at 3 p.m. And you texted back, good, period." It sounded like you were just meant the opposite.
Yeah, being ironic or something.
Being ironic, exactly. Yeah, good. Yeah, sure, good.
Yeah. And it's like air quotes or something.
So it's like either nothing or an exclamation point, or if you're really enthusiastic, two exclamation points.
Yeah, I got a 22-year-old daughter, too. And how old is your other one?
My other daughter is 24.
Oh, she's old, okay.
So she does texting as well.
Yeah. You know, people really don't write anymore. They message, though. Doesn't it affect writing in general when people only message to write? I mean, you know what I mean?
Well,
they're all messages.
You would think so, but you know, I teach writing at University of Delaware, and I've done so for a lot of years, 20 years, and that's actually one thing that I've never seen. You would think that people of that age would incorporate some of the tendencies of texting, like multiple exclamation points and LOL type abbreviations.
Yeah, so OMG has never turned up in anything they've turned in? Never?
Not once.
Wow.
It's actually the opposite problem. They're used to that kind of informal stuff, and then when it comes to a formal writing for publication, they get nervous, and they get a little spooked, and they go too far the other way, so use big words that are unnecessarily big, or worst of all, don't mean what they think it should mean.
Yeah.
So it's if there's a meeting of the minds between the texting messaging on one hand and this overly formal stuff, that would be the golden way to the goodness in writing.
Well, that sounded like a complete sentence.
Hmm.
You know what, though? Do you think a great literature will ever be written on a phone?
You know, I read a long New Yorker article about that's a thing now in Japan, was, that people write cell phone novels. And no, I frankly, I can't get my mind around that. Okay. I mean, can you?
No.
No, I wouldn't think so, no.
No. No. Well, I couldn't do it on a typewriter either. Or anyway. Okay, blogging, we talked about Twitters and so forth. Here's another thing now, my younger daughter, she's 19 now. Wants to be a writer, and okay, I'm not talking about her anymore, but I'm saying, what about the type of person, a young person now, who wants to write? They're sort of naturally verbal and can put that on paper and so forth, but they don't read.
Right. Oh boy, that
does that happen in your classes?
You find does it ever?
Yeah.
Three exclamation points.
Yeah.
Yeah. I It is ironic, and I remember they used to say that there were more people who wanted to be poets than people who actually bought books of poetry.
Oh, sure.
It was like a weird disconnect, and I do feel that's more generally true now of writers. And the bad thing is, and again, I'm thinking you probably will agree that the single best way to develop your skills as a writer, become a good writer, is to read a lot of all different kinds of things, books, articles, blog posts, you name it, short stories, fiction, nonfiction. You pick up so much information. You pick up so much about the way to write, tone, style, the sound, rhythm. You pick up vocabulary. You pick up ideas about punctuation much better than by learning it in a grammar classroom. And that's the single biggest issue or problem I see with my students. I feel they're bright and they're motivated and they, you know, have some ability, but they just haven't read enough. So there's like huge amounts of stuff they don't know, and punctuation and spelling are big problems. No question about it.
Yeah, I keep leaving shopping bags filled with a good, you know, a number of, you know, a little Kafka here, a little, you know, Joyce Carol Oates, you know, whatever.
A little bit of a downer, Michael. I mean,
well, I mean that's not all that's in there. There's some positive stuff too. Sylvia Plath is in there. There's a lot of
a little Vonnegut, maybe.
I mean, you're right. It is kind of negative now that I think about it. But that's just the things that I always thought were cool. You know, Marquez, you know, 100 Years of Solitude, anything like that. And I'm not saying this is my daughter now I'm talking about. I'm saying if one had a daughter like that.
Yeah, the hypothetical daughter.
Instead of watching The Housewives of wherever, why don't you, just read a book? And
You're doing the right thing, because I think keep leaving those shopping bags and, you know, go walk away and then see the person, the hypothetical person will kind of go through them and find the one thing, and that'll lead to other things. So I'm an optimist. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a writer, but when I was a kid, I really liked humorous stuff. So I read everybody who wrote any Ring Lardner, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Thurber, obviously, and all stuff. And so I could copy their styles, but it didn't work for me as well, you know, as it did for them. But I read everyone. Walt Kelly, I used to read. I read all the collected Pogo strips. Because I thought it was so amusing to see how they made Mark Twain. I read all of Mark Twain because that's all we had at home was a collection of Mark Twain. And so I started writing in dialect.
You have to have one thing. That's the best.
Started writing in dialect. That was a problem, you know.
Dialect is not something that really works too well nowadays. Yeah. That's a little bit harder.
But why wouldn't you, if you wanted to be a writer, why wouldn't you see how it's done, you know, at least?
You're absolutely right. It makes sense. But, you know, on the one hand, you were lucky. You were lucky that you loved reading it. And, you know, John Updike talks about reading Woodhouse, and Dave Barry talks about reading Benchley. And I think that... Yeah, I think you might have hit on something—the humor thing.
Yeah.
You know, Updike didn't end up being a humorous writer, although you know he was witty. But Dave Barry did. But I think that's the way in: finding that thing that you like, that if not love, and that'll lead to other things.
I think Updike's pretty funny, though.
Yep, he can be.
He's
not a laugh
funny.
A minute, kind of. You know.
You know, all his waspy couples. What was that couple that he had for all his years?
The Marples.
Them.
Yeah, a little grim, but I could sense you like the darker side as well.
I liked him, but plus I like the insights into wasp life, you know, that he provided. I really wanted to be one, you know, kind of.
It's a bit of a foreign country. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, the New England, you know, and
travelogue.
It was cool, and I like that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's great. He's one of my all-time idols as a writer.
Yeah. Which, you know, when I lost Updike, you know, it's a problem for me now, because I would find writers, and if I liked them, I'd read everything they wrote, even the bad stuff and the criticism and stuff, you know, everything that they wrote, read all. But when they start to die, then there's not going to be any more, you know.
No.
So I have all these dead writers now, and there's nothing coming from them.
Yeah. Well, except like writers like Louis L'Amour.
Who's
one of the few times he's been mentioned in the same conversation as Updike, but he died, and then there keep being new Louis L'Amour novels.
Oh, are there? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a brand, it's not the same thing. You're absolutely right. I think we're kindred Updike spirits here. I was so into him once that I was really excited. I was in college that his one play was about to be published, Buchanan Dying, a play about the death of President Buchanan.
Oh, that's a good one.
It didn't play on Broadway, but I remember kind of looking at the library catalog when it was going to come in and actually being excited when it did. So pretty pathetic.
I'm not saying he didn't make mistakes. He made that Martin Van Buren one. You know, give me a break. What?
The sequel.
Oh, unbelievable. And then Philip Roth, I was surprised when the Pope quit.
Right.
But when Philip Roth quit, I mean, I didn't think that was even possible, or you could stop being a writer.
Well,
shocked.
In retrospect, with Roth, who's, I guess, about the same age as Updike and now in his early 80s, he would write books regularly, one a year, one every other year, but they would get shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 300 page end to 225, 150. And you could, in retrospect, you could see there was a trend there.
Yeah.
And,
but the shorter is not bad.
No. But he was getting, I don't know if gnomic is the word, I'm not sure, but more brief until finally, did Hamlet say the brevity is all, or somebody said that?
Somebody said it, yeah.
And that's the deal.
Yeah, that last one on the playground with the polio thing, the guys were spitting on the playground to try to give these other kids in New Jersey polio or something.
That was one of his second to last, third to last ones.
It was short. It was mercifully short, I thought.
Right.
But it was kind of good in the same way.
He's a good writer.
But what do you do now? It's like when the Beatles, broke up. Philip Roth is gone. I got nobody left now.
Right. Well, you got to start looking for some of the younger folks, and
who would you recommend?
The futures market.
Who would you recommend that I should?
Well,
given my
the name that comes to mind is David Foster Wallace. Yeah. Ironically, he died.
He's dead too. Yeah. No. And I even interviewed him one time, and I said, "Don't you throw anything away?" That was the only thing I said, because all those footnotes and stuff,
Right.
He said, "I throw a lot away," and that was the end of that conversation.
This is the best. The footnotes are the best.
He said they're endnotes, not footnotes.
So he corrected you on that point.
Yeah.
Well, he was the master of the footnote.
Yeah.
There's so many outstanding writers. I mean, I just read. I'm sort of gotten a bit more into nonfiction, my own reading, but. Speaking of long books, a book called Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon, which is kind of about the nature of families in the United States today, and he worked on it for 10 years, and it's an awesome book. I mean, it's so beautifully written and reported, and, excellent books come out all the time. For light reading now, I'm reading Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. It's a good thriller.
Slower. I'm writing these down.
I don't think the blogosphere world and that change is having a especially deleterious effect on the better writers who still write books, articles, and so forth. I don't know. Yeah. Again, I'm an optimist. So,
and for people who are writing and beginning writers or even along the way, I recommend your book, by the way, The Sound on the Page.
Thank you.
Style and voice and writing, because that is really sort of getting back to, where this all comes from, the whole thing about being a reader first and having, because that's very helpful, actually, thinking about why am I writing in the first place.
Well, I appreciate that. That was a book I did a few years ago, and it was about the notion of a voice, meaning a distinctive style. So if you read Joyce Carol Oates, Philip Roth, John Updike, David Foster Wallace, Hemingway, whoever... If you haven't read it before, but if you're familiar with that writer, and irrespective of the subject matter, if you read a few sentences, you know who it is. So I was trying to figure out, where does that come from? What was the spring of that personal voice? Just the way if you hear Charlie Parker or Art Tatum, or you know who it is.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, and it's been written about, but it's a bit mysterious. So I decided to try to talk to as many of these writers as I could. And Updike didn't do personal interviews, but he corresponded with me by letter writing on his IBM Selectric typewriter, which was really cool. And I talked to Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer about style, yeah, and Cynthia Ozick, and Nicholson Baker, another great writer, Susan Orlean, just, you know, over 40 writers about their thoughts on the subject. So that was really fun to do.
I like Ozick's, she's the one who hated Hemingway. Hates.
That's right.
And everything that resulted from him, because Hemingway wrote the short sentences. Like, he was like a prize fighter in the writing ring. Short sentences. Well, short sentences, I guess.
Short sentences.
More like a reporter might do.
And you know, the example I gave about the semicolon, I was there, she wasn't, I believe was it, to quote myself. So normally you might separate those two with a semicolon. Hemingway would be with a period.
Right.
And there's the sound of Hemingway right there. Same word, same meaning, but a different sound.
And apparently a lot of people adopted that style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's what bothered
her. If you were a guy in kind of mid-century U.S., a male writer, that was who you had to contend with.
Yeah.
And some people did cool things with it, like in the detective genre, people like Raymond Chandler and Ross McDonald and Hammett were sort of doing a modified Hemingway. I would say even Vonnegut, to bring him back in, was in some way of the school of Hemingway and made it his own, which is what the best writers do.
Well, Vonnegut said he wrote for his sophomores in high school or something, because he worked on a school paper.
Yeah, so that simplicity. Was
his, yeah.
He always talked about simplicity, yeah. Clarity.
Yeah. And asked what his motive was in writing. He told me to feed his blank family. So you got to admire that sort of dedication.
I take it he didn't say blank.
No, he didn't say blank.
No.
But I did.
I got it.
All right, very good. Well, Ben, I know you probably have things to do.
You got
a big weekend planned?
Come up with something, sure.
Yeah. You got it. And actually, we didn't talk about this book. Did you want to talk more about this? But we can, about writing right and wrong. Thanks.
How to not write bad.
Yeah, how to not write bad. And what's wrong with that sentence, Ben?
Well, wrong is a harsh word. It splits an infinitive. You know, and you were probably taught not to do that, and that is a bogus rule. There is no such rule.
Not anymore, or there was.
No, there never was. It got invented. It was invented by some guys in the 1800s who thought that English should be modeled on Latin, and that was their notion, and it had legs. And but there's nothing. People, Shakespeare and Henry James and everybody have split infinitives. So, but it still has held it so strongly that about 40% of the time when people mention the name of my book, they call it How Not to Write Bad. They actually edit the title of the book.
So it's had some effect, a positive effect.
They just can't say how to not write bad. And, of course, the other thing that is wrong, certainly for any kind of formal published writing, is to say bad instead of badly.
Badly.
Because it should be an adverb, not an adjective. But I was being playful there.
Would you say that adverb misuse is the number one crime committed by writers?
No, it's way down the list. Maybe bottom of the top 10, but there's worse crimes than that.
What would you, on your list, what would be the number one, because you got to read all this stuff.
Yeah.
Number one worst.
Wrong word.
Okay.
Sometimes, spell check issues, so things like, you know, stemming from the lack of reading, I had a student submit something that said, I wore a sequence-covered dress. And spell check was great with that.
Yeah.
And someone else wrote about a heroin, H-E-R-O-I-N-E.
Oh, that's going to happen.
A heroin addict, A-T-T-I-C.
Liked bodice rippers a lot.
A colleague of mine had a student who wrote about someone's pompous boyfriend, P-A-M-P-A-S.
An Argentine.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. So, you know, that's fun, but it's a little also unsettling that there are a lot of this. And then and things like, you know, it's apostrophe S instead of S and your, things like that. And sometimes the online thesaurus is a problem because people they already used say excellent the last sentence, and they want to come up with an alternative, and they just click on the thesaurus, and they feel that all the words are equivalent. So they can just kind of close their eyes and pick one at random.
You know, I got a thesaurus for my bar mitzvah, and I seriously overused it. I turned in some sixth grade themes that were astounding in their use of vocabulary.
Yeah, you could tell, you know.
Yeah, because it was Roget, too, because this is like we're talking about early 20th century or something, probably late 19th century, a lot of those terms that you don't hear anymore.
Right, right. You had the archaic-sounding sixth-grade theme.
That was good that way. Yeah, the spell check thing I'm very aware of, because in spell check, my name is Michael Feminine. I got that all.
Yeah, autocorrect. That's another peril.
I had to change that.
Cool boy.
Well, Ben, I know you got to go, and we probably should do some other things, too, but it's great talking with you. The book is How to Not Write Bad.
You got it.
And thanks very much for talking with us. Ben Yagoda.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Hey. The most common writing problems and the best ways to avoid them. Okay. Hey, Siri. Hitting some of those. Yes.
You guys were talking about dialogue a little bit. Remember that book? I think you read it. It was by a Scottish author, maybe English.
Yeah.
But he wrote dialogue with no punctuation and phonetically.
Right.
And it took you about 30 pages, and then suddenly you could understand.
In the Scottish street vernacular.
Right. It was kind of cool. That probably breaks all the rules, but somehow that worked.
Yeah. No, that was great. He was great. Who was that?
Oh, well, I can't remember.
All right. What?
Robert Byrne.
Yes. Him. I don't know if that was him. Sounds right, though. Robert Burns. You say Robert Byrne? No.
Don't remember.
What's this song going to be?
You've changed.
Okay. Jeff Hammond on the bass. Never getting that again. Oh, we're on the air now. Okay, well, welcome back, and how are you? Pretty good? Good. We're running late here, so I got to cut right to Krakow, Wisconsin, and the Reinhardt family. Go right to them. Are they here? Yes, here they are. Okay, excellent. We just come down here and say hello to all. These are all Reinhardts? That one? She's a what? What is she then? What are you then?
A Shabilsky.
That's good too. We love those. All from Pulaski High? Yeah?
Yep.
The mascot at Pulaski is?
Raider.
The what?
Raider.
A Pulaski Raider?
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's good. Are you a Raider then?
Yeah.
You got to think about that though.
Lady Raider.
You're a new Raider? New to the Raiders?
Yeah.
Are you out for any sports or things?
Softball, basketball, and soccer.
Oh, you had to think about that. You're out for everything. There's nothing you didn't go on. That's great. You must be good in just a general athlete, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And your name is
Caitlin.
Caitlin. Okay. And then we got this mom here, right?
Yep. Stephanie.
Stephanie, and you're
Chantel.
Chantel, did you go out for something this year? Or?
Volleyball.
Volleyball. Oh, good. Yeah. How's that going?
Good.
Yeah. Okay. And then you're?
Natalie,
and what's new with you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No.
Must be something going on.
I play volleyball and softball.
Volleyball and softball, okay. Anything coming up in school, like big dances or anything like that?
We're at a state basketball tournament.
You are? This weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow, is that why you're here? Oh, fantastic. Pulaski, Raiders. Go Raiders.
Hi.
How are you, dear?
Good.
And you're?
Emily.
Emily, are you at the high school now yet or not yet?
No.
Where are you at?
ABVM.
What does that mean?
It's a school.
Oh. It's got a lot of letters for a school, though, doesn't it?
No.
No? Okay. Well, nice to see you, too. You have a sport?
Soccer, basketball, softball, running, and soccer.
Okay. You're forgetting something. Lacrosse. You got to take up lacrosse.
What?
Lacrosse.
Lacrosse.
Yeah. Try lacrosse. It's a good sport.
What?
You get to use a stick. You get to use a stick and hit other girls with it. It's a wonderful... There you have the Reinhards, ladies and gentlemen, and her as well from Krakow. Go Raiders! Pulaski, come on, we're talking to Raiders basketball. All right, people, we're going to play the quiz right now. This is your big chance, sir, to read this thing here now. So you got your bifocals on, or are those trifocals? How many focals you got on there? Do you have trifocals? You got three?
Three.
Can I see all three of them? Oh, yeah, there's three of them there. Right. What do you use the third one for?
The computer.
Okay.
As I lay on my back. And, you know.
Okay. So you want to just read that, and then we'll get on with this.
All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, I've decided not to observe daylight savings time this year. Three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. Your name, I didn't get your name.
Charlie Kitty.
Charlie, because we got agents call us all the time.
Right.
Well, here, take this with you, Charlie. Prove that you did it. Anyone doubts you did. Let's see the hands of anyone who wants to play the What Do You Know quiz. A chance for you to win. Sir, you were first. Come on. That counts for something. In fact, you're only. You're first and only. To raise their hand, showing an interest in the What Do You Know quiz. How are you?
I'm good.
And you are?
Paul.
Paul, are you from around here, Paul?
I live in Stoughton.
Oh, you live in Stoughton, so you're not from around here then?
No.
You're from Stoughton.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had the Vikings against the Vikings yesterday, but we lost in the basketball tournament.
How could the Vikings lose under those circumstances?
It's a tough thing, but we managed to win.
Paul, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Today's my birthday.
Today's his birthday! Come on, Paulie. Come on down here. Okay. Well, careful there. No steps, Paul.
Just one drink.
Yeah, that's yours.
All right, thank you.
Okay. All right. So was it a close game, though, or what?
No, it was a complete blowout from the beginning.
Yeah, the Vikings really?
They were very tall, but they were not quick as the other teams. So.
Yeah. Where were these other Vikings from?
Milwaukee. I think it was Wonky Lutheran.
Oh, the Lutheran Vikings.
The Lutheran, yes.
Yeah.
They do.
That's a bad combination to be both Lutheran and Viking.
Well, I'm sure
they're going to get you every time.
Yeah, but I'm Lutefisk is the common theme there with the Lutherans, you know. So.
Yeah, you'd think they'd have to be some common ground, but not in sports.
Not necessarily.
No. Yeah. Okay. So, what are you doing these days, Paul?
Been trying to floss more, but it's not working out.
Floss more is in Illinois, as I recall.
It's not working out real well, though.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, that's good. We'll leave it at that. If you want to leave it at that, or are you in a profession of some sort or an occupation?
Yeah, I'm a nurse.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't say male nurse, because it's so obvious you're male. And
yeah.
I hate it when people do that.
Yeah, being a female nurse would have taken a lot of operations. It would have been a little more involved.
I know, so but doesn't it bother you? I'm going to say a male nurse. Right?
Yeah, well, at work they just call me the boy nurse.
The boy nurse. That's so much nicer. That's so much nicer. And where does that happen?
In Stoughton.
In Stoughton, at the, where is
it? At the hospital. There.
At the hospital. So. The Vikings hospital.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everybody wore purple, but I didn't have any purple to wear yesterday.
Oh, you didn't? What'd you do then?
I just wore my normal uniform.
Yeah. Well, you don't wear purple if you're a boy nurse, though.
Well, that would be, yeah.
Yeah, come on.
I could.
All right, Paul.
All right.
Someone out there plays along with you and how this works, the general quiz thing?
Yep.
Okay. And how do they do that, then?
This is an encore edition of What Do You Know, so save your coin for a future quiz.
Okay, thanks to discreet use of spittoons, Strom Thurmond's filibuster lasted how many times as long as Rand Paul's? That's the question there. It's kind of a general historical knowledge question. Let's go to Paul on the phone here from Worthington, Ohio. Hey, Paul.
I'm sorry. How long did Strom Thurmond's filibuster last?
Yeah, compared to Rand Paul's, was it like twice as long, three times
as
long?
Oh, okay. I'm going to say easily twice as long.
Okay, easily twice as long. That's good. We'll accept that. That's right. Paul. We got Paul and Paul. And Rand Paul. This is getting crazy. What do you do out there in Worthington, Paul?
I'm retired from medical practice management.
Medical practice management.
Yeah, you want to, when they talk about herding cats, yeah, that's what it is.
Herding cats.
Oh, herding cats. I mean,
herding cats.
Yeah,
not
okay.
Hurting.
No.
Hurting.
That's what the doctors do.
That's different, though. Okay. It may be also a worthwhile occupation.
Okay. And we have a nurse here, so this is perfect. Paul.
Hey,
Paul.
I know, and the other nurse is Paul, too, isn't he? The other contestant is also a Paul.
That's what I just said here. Yeah. That's what I was just saying. And then
right.
It's a small world.
Yeah, it's an echo.
Okay. We have various categories, don't we, Sarah Nix?
We do. And they are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Paul, Worthington Paul, you can pick the first one. What would you like?
Science.
Science it is. Okay, here we go. There are as many as 117, 1,300,000, or 4.5 billion Earth-like planets in the Milky Way alone. Paul?
I would say like in the billion.
And what was that number again, Michael?
4.5 billion.
That's too low.
What's the middle one?
Too low? what? 1,300,000.
Maybe 300,000.
No, 1,300,000.
Oh, 1,300,000. Okay. Paul, what do you think?
Paul?
So what are the choices again?
117, 1,000,003, or 4.5 billion.
I would go with the big number.
He's going big, Paul.
I'm not going to disagree.
You're not going to?
No.
But are you going to agree? Is really not.
Well, yeah.
Your manager is showing here, isn't he? Your own manager, Gene.
Well, no. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, are these Earth-like planets or just planets?
Just agree with them, will you?
I'll agree.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yes, that's right. Okay. All right, these managers can drive you nuts. Do you have managers there at the hospital? Yeah?
Let me just equivocate.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay, what's left there?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Paul?
Things you should have learned in school.
Not you. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Thanks.
Yeah, that one. The other Paul.
School, okay. All right, school it is. The year that the light we see today left the North Star. Okay, so if you look at the North Star tonight, I don't know, what year did that light that you are seeing actually leave the North Star? Was it 1579, 1776, or 1913?
1579.
Holy.
I'm going to agree.
Yes, 1579. How do you know all this stuff, Paul?
He went to school.
Did you go to school?
I did go to school. Yeah.
Stoughton speaks well of Stoughton.
Good.
You went through the Stoughton schools, I presume?
No, I did not.
Oh, no wonder.
Actually, I'm a transplant. I'm new to town. I've only been there 10 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Okay, so then, Sarah?
That's two right and zero wrong.
Okay, this could be it here.
And categories remaining are current events, people, places, or odds and ends.
Paul?
Current events.
Not you. Current events? Okay.
Quit messing with me, Michael.
I'm not messing with you, Paul. According to Forbes' billionaires list, you could get 5, 8, or 10 Mark Zuckerbergs for one Bill Gates.
Ooh.
Hmm. 5,
well,
10?
5, 8, or 10.
Gates, 5, 8, or 10.
Gates was like second or third. He had, I saw that this week.
Yeah.
It was about 68 billion, I think, or something thereabouts.
Yeah, I've been there.
I'm
67 million.
I guess I'm going to go look maybe
change.
With the high number.
67 and change. What?
I'm thinking
10? You think
you
get 10 Mark Zuckerbergs for one Bill Gates? Paul, what do you think about that?
I didn't see Zuckerberg on the list because I'm not real interested in billionaires.
You're not, huh?
But
They think about you all the time.
I think that. Well, yeah, they do. I think that's a little high.
So you're going with a low?
It was 10, 5, and what?
5, 8, and 10.
5, 8, and 10.
Yeah.
Paul, I would go with a lower number.
Oh, you would now.
Well,
you would now, would you, Paul?
I'm just saying.
It's either 5 or 8.
He's done well so far.
5 or 8 or 10?
Well,
or 5?
Not the 10. 5. 5 sounds good.
You're thinking 5?
Yeah.
He's thinking 5. What do you think, Paul?
5 sounds good.
You can go along with that?
Yeah.
5 is right. Holy cow. 5 Mark Zuckerbergs for 1 Bill Gates. If he could make the deal, he'd have to close it somehow. Whoa, they've won.
They
really,
haven't won, yeah.
But there's implications.
There are risks that can be taken. If they want to risk it all and answer one more question right, they can win the mother load.
You mean all or nothing?
Yes.
At all?
Yeah, correct.
Don't
Paul,
play
how can we not do it?
There's no choice.
So they're going for it. Oh, you got to get this next one right. You can win everything. You get it wrong, you lose everything. And you owe us for our time.
And the categories remaining are people, places, or odds and ends.
Okay. Paul, it's back to you.
Odds and ends, please.
Odds and ends. This could be anything. Let's see if it is. On a scale from 1 to 10, you are a what? This is a study at Cornell. People all say the same thing, so apparently, or most people. On a scale from 1 to 10, you are a what? In any area.
Paul, I'm going to give us like a 7.
I was going to say 8, but 7 sounds good.
7 is exactly right. You are a 7. Paul, you're a 7. Paul, Aaron Worthington, you're a 7. What have they won?
Paul, you've won the epitome of what do you know prizes, a pair of wondrously pink plastic hot pink flamingos from Pink Ink.
Holy cow.
And carry your quiz victory to greater heights and discover how to become a higher brain performer by increasing your brain's creativity, energy, and focus with Sandra Bond Chapman's Make Your Brain Smarter with instructions on 9 habits to keep your brain fit at any age from Free Press. Then indulge yourselves in the joy of X. No, not a reworking of the 1970s classic, but a guided tour of math from 1 to infinity by Stephen Strogatz from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt Publishing.
That's hard to say.
And keep the spirit of Newt Gingrich alive with What Do You Newt? Public Radio Lives bumper sticker. The other Paul, begin every day with enthusiasm, drinking Stephen Brew's breakfast blend, and continue the Java vibe with rich and smooth Costa Rican Terrazu, precision roasted in Madison by Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. Then show your allegiance to Fargo's Thundering Herd with the handsome T-shirt from North Dakota State University Bisons. Enjoy swinging jazz with a dime novel Rat Pack feel on the CD Wrong Way Charlie Safari Adventure from the Mr. Lucky Swing Syndicate. And find out how many Americans feel they work with a bunch of monkeys, among other solidly researched information. In What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivias, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both.
Nice job. Paul, great to meet you. Happy birthday, man. Paul, great to meet you as well. Hang on, make sure you get that stuff.
What Do You Know returns to Monona Terrace next week. That's April 5th for a live broadcast of the show. For a full schedule and ticket information, click over to notmuch.com. Coming up in the next hour of What Do You Know, Michael stacks wood with Norwegian specialist Lars Midding, plus a batch of memos and another hilarious round of the What Do You Know quiz. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international, and this is PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, Norwegian author Lars Midding talks about the art of stacking wood in his home country, plus thanks for the memos and another round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now the man who tends to fall back when he springs ahead, it's Michael Feldman.
Solid wood. Well met. Thank you very much, Sarah Nix. By the way, did I sing happy birthday to you? I don't think I did. Her birthday was this past week.
It was? Yep.
Yes.
I'm 25.
And we got to sing happy birthday to you off air as well.
Yes, good.
Okay,
let's
we'll do
that
several times.
Yep.
I think we should switch to that for our next off air segment. You know, each week at this time, I read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. Okay. here's a few things here. First of all, a song about Milwaukee. It's not actually a memo, but someone wrote a song about Milwaukee because I was complaining that there were so few songs about Milwaukee, except beer songs. And reads as follows: if memory serves, I once heard you say there were no songs written about Milwaukee. There are a few. I have been playing with rewriting the lyrics of an old song for a long time, just for fun. Finally finished it. I only lived in Milwaukee for 7 years long ago. Liked the city, but hardly know anyone anymore to share this with. It would be only entertaining to someone familiar with the Milwaukee area. It's a send-up of an old song that you're probably familiar with, and I'm sure your trio knows it. Let's get away from it all. Let's take a boat to Bermuda. Yeah, that's okay. We will not do it as a musical. But to give you some idea what this, how this goes, from Jeannie Perry's tribute to Milwaukee, let's take a walk to West Allis. Let's take a bus to Brown Deer. We'll have a picnic on South Kinnikinick. It's lovely this time of year. And it goes on from there. Two, we'll have a ball in New Berlin. We'll watch Menominee Falls. Maybe I'll phone you from out on Titonia if you're still taking my calls. Okay. Thank you very much. It's got promise. Okay. Milwaukee song. There was a country song. What made Milwaukee famous? Made me a drunk or something like that. What was that one? Brad Paisley. Didn't he have a Milwaukee song? Yes? Brad Paisley fans? Yeah, what was that song?
What made Milwaukee famous made a loser out of me.
Made a loser out of me. Mine's shorter. My version's shorter. Here we go. Oh, this is not a memo either. What is this? Oh, this is just... I get a lot of these, so I'll just read one of these so you won't feel the need to send these in anymore. From Alicia Lidke. We just received the below from the Blackhawk County EMA. Their weather spotter class scheduled for tonight at Hawkeye Community College has been rescheduled due to weather. Okay. Get a lot of those. Here's the actual memo, though. It reads as follows. This is goes out to everyone, and it reads as follows. I am sure you are aware of the sudden change of continuous stream of music on the PA system. This was done in an effort to create some background noise around offices and meeting areas where confidential discussions were being heard outside of the intended areas. This was caused by the reduction in background noise from the new HVAC system. We understand that you may not particularly like the choice of music. Maintenance will be around to adjust the volumes to a lower level if necessary. The music also will be switched out on a regular basis to create some variety. Thank you for your understanding, patience, and cooperation. There you have it, why they keep playing Heart Attack. Song Heart Attack. Can you play that? By Demi Lovato. Ooh. So. If they wanted to send that in, how would they do that, Sarah?
They would send memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or they can go to notmuch.com and post it there.
And did you have a happy birthday?
I did. I had a very happy birthday.
That's nice.
Is your birthday going to be happy?
I'll be happy when it's over. You know, you reach a certain point where each one of them is just kind of like slaps you in the face. You know, it's your birthday. Smack. You know, okay. But, you know, it's better than not having any, you know.
That's true.
Yeah. I keep, yeah. You know me, I'm positive. Yeah. I always keep a positive attitude. Someone asks me how I'm doing, sure. I say wonderful.
Yeah.
Ask me how I'm doing.
How are you doing, Mike?
Wonderful. Okay. This is exciting, actually. We have, this gentleman now is sweeping the world. He's a sensation, actually. His book in Norway is Helved, which means... good wood. He's the man who has become famous for, you know, Norwegians and wood. It's not just the song. They love their wood. Every Norwegian is entitled to one, at least one fire source, a wood burner or a fireplace or whatever. I think by law they're required to burn as much wood as possible. I'm surprised they have any wood left in Norway, to tell you the truth. And Lars Midding is the guy who became famous by writing this book, which tells, you know, various things about stacking wood, using wood, burning wood, everything about wood. And his book will soon be published in this country as well, but right now we're waiting for that. Until then, we have him on the line with us. Lars Midding, all the way from Oslo. He's on the line with us right now. Lars, are you there?
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's very nice to speak with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Your book is a sensation. How are you standing up to all the scrutiny and all the publicity and all that sort of thing?
Oh, that's okay. I just, it was a big surprise, of course, but, yeah. You know, life goes on.
Yeah. What is it with Norwegians and wood?
Well, simple question is, or simple reply is yeah. that if it hadn't been for the firewood, we would not have been here at all. Because in a cold country, you simply need it. So the we have a long tradition for it. And the main difference between Norway and other countries is that we've never had an interruption by coal. We've had electricity, of course, mm-hmm. and kerosene, but the tradition of using firewood has never, well, it has never disappeared completely, and the last 30 years it's been steady rising.
Did you first burn all the wood from Sweden and then go on to your own?
Well, you'd imagine. We always love to compete with the Swedes, but
yeah.
in fact, the Swedes, they burn even more than us, so
they do.
We have a bit of catching up to.
Yeah, but there's more to that. There's something like psychological or sort of important in the especially with male Norwegians and wood. How do you explain that connection?
Well, if you just look at the subject, you would believe that, well, this is something you can source and say buy at the petrol station and use when you need it, but a lot of people here, they harvest it themselves and they put a lot of effort into making it as good as possible, and very often it's the older men who's into this sort of work, and they have a lot of time, you know, so they gather as much as they can. They gather and gather firewood until the house is full. And it's been a tradition, in fact, that by the really old men, that you should have a wood pile that survives you, that will stand after your death.
Your pile will stand after your death?
Well, you have to work on it. And, make a lot of it, and it's a good tradition that your widow should be able to warm herself on the firewood.
Yeah.
That you, yeah.
and maybe throw you on the pile as well as it's burning.
Yeah.
Just to, in some cases, and not all.
But to be serious, it is. It's a way for a man, you know, to bring warmth. In many senses of the word, to take care of your family. But of course, it's we live in a modern society, so this is a route that goes way back to older times. So it's both nostalgia, a reminder of how things were, and something practical that a lot of people does.
Yeah, and the title of your book actually in English is Solid Wood, but that's also something you say about a man if. Solid wood is sort of a positive thing to say about a man.
Yes, absolutely. If you compare it with a tree that's rotten inside, it will be hollow inside. It will look okay when you look at it, but when you cut it down, you see that it is hollow or rotten inside. Mm. So solid wood simply means someone that you can trust, and what you see is what you get, actually.
Yeah. The controversy comes in the stacking. Is that pretty much where there's some division of opinion?
No, there's division of opinion on a lot of things, both what kind of firewood to use and how to operate the stove and what is best. But absolutely in the stacking, there's a lot of difference. And the biggest thing is, or, you know, the smallest details is often the ones that makes the most discussion and controversy, and here it's if we should have the bark up or if it should face down in a wood pile.
Yeah. What is your own feeling on it?
Well, it depends on the climate, more or less. It's along the coast, it's best practice to have the bark up because it's water repellent, and if you get a lot of rain like you do on the coast, it will drip off and not come into the wood. Bark down will make it dry a little bit faster. So in the inner parts of the country, it's the tradition is to have bark down, and that's the way I always done it. So
you're inner.
Bark. Yeah, yeah, it's in my blood to put the bark down.
It dries a little faster if the bark is down, but
it gets
wetter, so it's kind of ironic, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, you know, but it's not the biggest difference because the firewood dries, most of the fire, or it dries faster through the ends. So whether you put it up or down is more or less something you can have an argument to your neighbor about. It doesn't make that much difference in practice, but it's fun to have something to argue about.
Yeah, and it's and a way of talking, maybe, if people aren't, if they're a bit taciturn, sometimes you can always talk about the wood, right?
Oh, yeah, but, it will cause a heated debate very often, and the various ways of stacking it is also where people can express themselves.
Yes.
You can tell a lot of a person through the way his or her wood pile looks.
Yeah, and I saw the guy who stacked his wood in the shape of the king and queen. I thought that was a little unusual.
Yeah, it was an old man in a very, very remote part of Norway who had made a sculpture of the royal family, and they made headlines after. It was a newspaper. I think they were driving a car 6 or 7 hours just trying to find him because he lives way deep inside the woods. so he hadn't had visitors for a very long time.
Yeah.
But then, that made national headlines here, and people take pride in it, and they. It can be both a way to make a funny sculpture that you can burn for the winter.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And what I guess there was a TV show where they showed nothing but wood burning based on your book, right?
We had
inspired by.
It was in two parts. We had actually 4 hours of. Call it infotainment about chainsaws, axes, splitting, the various types of wood, how to operate a stove, and so on. 4 hours of that.
Yeah.
And this, it was hugely popular. So, it's crazy, but after that, we had 8 hours of live fireplace.
Live fireplace.
Yes. Completely unscripted.
Yeah. And I got, once again, huge numbers, lots of people watching that.
Yes, I did. We had, they had followers who it started at midnight, and the fire was burning all the way till 8 o'clock in the morning, and I know there were people watching the whole thing. And what actually was funny was that, I was sleeping at that time, completely exhausted. But what was funny was that people felt this was exciting to look at.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. And then I, on second thought, when I looked at it myself, I wouldn't call it very suspenseful, but... But what struck me was that for thousands of years, people has looked into the fire and they've been anxious over the fire, you know, getting out. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was that old ancient feeling that came back to the viewers, that they were afraid that the photographer should fall asleep and the fire go out.
Yeah. Interesting. The controversy on what to burn. Do you favor pine or spruce or what?
Well, actually, most of the traditions in most countries go way back to old times, and the favorite has always been the heaviest wood.
Sure.
Yeah, like oak, hickory, and here in Norway it's been beech and the harder woods. But actually, in a modern house with a modern clean burn stove. Sometimes it gets too hot by using this old firewood that traditionally was favored. So I like to burn pine and aspen and the lighter types of wood. But for the very, very cold nights, we get down to 35 Celsius below here. And then I always use the hardest and best type of wood. But for modern use of a stove, then it's good to have a bit of a selection of various sorts of wood.
Yeah. How big is your stack right now?
Well, it's I used half of it. I have an enormous reserve here. But, 2 meters high.
Well, that's pretty
two
big.
Layers and 5 meters across, I'd say. Yeah.
Is there some competition in that regard between one man's stack and another?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And,
like who in your neighborhood, is there a guy who has like the biggest stack, or would that be you?
No. I have an old lumberjack who lives, just 20 meters up here. And he's an expert with the axe. And... Well, he got a little bit carried away 2 years ago, so he has firewood under the veranda, and he has 5 layers outside the longest wall, and also his garage is full.
Yeah.
So no place for the car.
Oh.
And he says that, well, it's I'll give it to my daughter, and because they need it, but it's... I think he has enough for 25 winters or so.
Yeah. Well, I hope he has 25 winters. That's important. That's perfect.
Yeah. But he continues. I think if you just let him work on with his axe, he will have 50 winters.
Yeah. Just parenthetically here, I mean, are there people who have made structures out of their firewood because they have so much that they can actually build a habitat or some sort of structure from using the stacked wood?
Yeah. Yes, some people enjoy to make play sheds, you know, small houses that kids can play in.
Oh.
So you need obviously quite long logs. You need like 50, 60 centimeters long to get it so it doesn't fall down. But then you can actually make a freestanding small house of it. And... that also is a tradition.
Yeah. Now, you yourself, you're a novelist, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I've written 2 novels, and I'm working on my third one. Yeah.
Working on the third one right now, when you're not stacking and so forth. So this sort of came out of nowhere for you, the solid wood, in a sense.
Yeah, it was meant as a side project, actually, something that shouldn't be, something I meant to write in a few months, and then... Well, we didn't have much hope, actually, that it would even find a market here. So it was a huge surprise for us. But what I learned was that if it's a subject that you could cover in maybe 10 pages, and then most of the important things would be done. But what if we doesn't limit it to 10 pages? What if we make 200 and go deep into the details? And
yes.
That was exactly what was needed to bring the story alive.
Yeah.
So the drier the subject, the deeper you have to go into the detail.
That's good. And so we don't have the book here yet, so I'm not quite sure. How did you fill it out? Did you go into the history and the metaphysics of it and the religious connotations of wood and wood burning?
Some of it. I try to cover all the stages from the woods, from the fire forest, and all the way through, the work in with sawing it, splitting it, stacking it, and then a lot of how to operate the stove, and also what is very important is the environmental aspects, because if you use it wrong, it will pollute a lot, but correctly used, it actually pollutes very, very little. So that was also very important. And what I found was that when I was to interview people and build the story, I found it was very hard to say, get someone to talk about the emotions in it, they would say one or two sentences, and then they felt it was difficult to speak about. But when I asked how they did it, then the true story came, and they there was no limit to the details and care that they took in how to get the wood as good as possible. So that's how the book is told, actually. It's a practical guide, but you can tell by the voice that there is someone who is a firewood geek who's written it.
Yeah. Well, I can hardly wait till it comes here. Helved, it is in Norwegian, correct? And here it will be solid wood, and it is coming to our shores?
Yes. We hope it will be out this autumn.
This autumn. Yeah. Great. Lars, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a busy man between the stacking and the writing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's
Lars,
a pleasure.
Lars Midding, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Oslo. Really cool. It's actually really cool. I'm sort of excited about it. I don't know why, but it's good. So that's how, you know, if you want to get a Norwegian to open up, because we have, you know, we're filled with Norwegians here, too. You know, they're not that different once they come over here, you know. You get a few words out of them, but, you know, start talking. Now I know what to do. Start talking about, hey, see if you're stacking your wood out there. Nice pile. You got a nice pile out there. And it will flow from that.
Hopefully they don't come back and say, you know, what do you mean by that? nothing. Oh, nothing.
Well, that's because you're Swedish, man. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Don't think they don't know that.
I don't know how to use an axe, though.
No, you know, never did. Well,
you don't have a fireplace, do you? You don't have a fireplace.
I got a little box there. Yeah.
Do you buy it or? Well, obviously you buy it.
Yeah. No, some guy comes and dumps it in the yard. Yeah. Every so often.
Do you want him to? I mean,
every decade or so. We don't use that much of it. But the whole kind of process behind it and the history behind it, and it's really interesting, I think. Yeah. So I look forward to Helved on our shores.
What's it called?
Helved.
Helved?
Yeah. Means solid wood. Which you are, by the way, man.
Thanks, man.
You're Helved. You too, Jeff. And here's something to prove it.
Yes.
Gentlemen, once again, Michael Feldman.
What? Oh. Oh, give me that, will you? Jeff? No, give me the bass. You're not using it.
Oh, just kidding.
Joking. Okay, we're back here. Oh, I thought you guys left. You're back. Did the rest of the family leave?
Just the restroom.
Oh, the restroom. Okay, because I think that's just a straight drop to the lake out there. Then. That's the evacuation door, and I hope they're all right. Well, it's frozen. At least they won't go through, probably. Dan from Chicago is retired. Is that you? Hi, Dan.
Dan?
He's very retiring. He's not even inside his coat.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you feeling?
I'm wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
This is the man who's so positive. Even as a kid, would you say wonderful? People ask you that?
Probably not.
No. Recent years, though.
Recent years.
Did you decide you're going to say, not bad was no longer good enough for you?
PMA. Positive mental attitude.
Oh. There's letters for it. Cool. Did you take a course? Really? Is it in texting? Is there PMA in texting? PMS? I know there's PMS. Just one letter difference between PMA and PMS, sir.
You're correct.
And your name is?
Marshall.
Marshall, are you from around here?
Chicago.
Chicago. Okay, because he's from Chicago, too.
Right.
What field are you in?
I'm an attorney.
You are? At law?
Quite a bit.
Why do they always say that? Like, there's a different kind of attorney? Attorney at random or something? Attorney at large? What kind of law do you specialize in?
Real estate.
Oh, yeah. How's that working out for you?
It's okay.
Okay, yeah, okay, good. Glad to hear it. Where'd he go?
It's the restroom, I believe.
Dan? Would someone actually knock on the door and see if Dan is all right in the restroom? Anyone see a man out there wandering? Adam, did you see a guy? We're worried about him because he disappeared. He retired. And now he apparently went to the restroom. What? Yeah. Okay. I'm sure he's all right. There he is. Dan, ladies and gentlemen. Fresh from the restroom. Come on, Dan. Come on down. Hey, Dan, this is your life, man.
Good afternoon, good morning, whatever time it is.
Okay. You're gone for a long time. We were a little worried about you.
I had to call my mom in Florida, so that was part of the reason.
From the restroom you called her?
Well, immediately after the restroom.
Okay. Did you wash your hands, by the way, because I just shook it?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, it's great to have you here, and how's things? You're retired now?
Yes.
You're retired full-time or part-time?
Kind of part-time.
Yeah. What do you do the rest of the time?
Think about what I'm going to do when I get out of retirement.
Do you have retirement skills? Because I'm worried about this every day now, because I don't play golf. I don't paint Civil War miniatures. I don't have little trains in the basement. Nothing. You got anything like that?
Not quite yet. I'm still working on that. It's sort of a work in progress.
Yeah. What are you thinking of doing?
Well, hike some trails, do some fishing, a lot of outdoors kind of activity.
Maybe you got tackle and all that kind of stuff.
Some tackle. But mainly, canoeing, kayaking.
Oh, okay, so you got
everything.
Do you have the kayak already?
Yes, I do.
Okay, cool. So you're okay. I'm not going to worry about you. You're a good man. All right. Oh, did you have a question here? So your question is kind of...
Yes, Milwaukee has the German Fest, the Irish Fest, the Pride Fest.
Yeah.
Why no Jewish Fest?
Oh. Well, they tried to start a Jew Fest. But, Milwaukee, they expect we be served, So, hey, we didn't want to do that. So. Oh, okay. How are you? Pretty good?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
Yeah. How's the winter treating you? What do you think about this winter? It was almost like a real winter this year.
Very much so. I'm a little tired of it.
Are you?
I really am. I like
really? What don't you like about it?
Snow.
Snow and ice?
And ice.
Yes.
Bad driving.
Having bad temperatures?
Bad temperatures, the whole nine yards.
So there's really nothing you like about winter.
Nothing whatsoever.
Okay. How long have you lived here?
All my life.
Did it ever occur to you to leave and go to a place where it just doesn't happen?
I don't like hot weather.
What's your name again?
Myra.
Myra, because I'm going to quote you.
Thank you.
Maybe a temperate, somewhere in between where it's not hot, not cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Parts of Missouri are sort of like that there.
Oh, yeah, maybe Kansas, someplace like that.
Who knows? Or Missouri, depending on your feelings about that. All right. Well, nice to talk to you. Let's see. My daughter, Jennifer, wonders, what is your favorite utensil? What? Mary Cronin from Fox Point, Wisconsin. Hi. Is this the daughter here? Did you really wonder that? Oh, is it really? Does that work for you as an icebreaker? When does that actually work for you as an icebreaker? Have you, like, in a social, like, you're in a bar, and the guy comes up and says, and he's there at the bar, and you say, what's your favorite utensil? Yeah? And what generally do they say then?
A lot of people say spoon a lot, go for the cop out and say spork or something.
Spork.
Yeah. So if a guy says spork to you, what does that make you feel? No feelings about any of the utensils. You're a user. You're a user. A guy reveals to you his preference for a spork, something like that. He thinks you're sincere about this whole utensil thing, but you're a user. Think about it. Okay. No, you're not. You're cute. And I love you very deeply. I love you know what, I've gone through this really weird thing now. We have this we got this set of flatware. You know, when you get married, at some point, the big purchase is your flatware, your tableware.
Right.
Flatware or tableware?
I called mine silverware, but
oh, yeah. But it's not silver, you know.
Oh, mine is.
Yours is, but where'd you say you live again? Real silver, okay. Don't even say that.
I've got the real silver.
No, you don't want people to know you've got real silver. See, that's what you should ask these guys. Is that real silver? You know, something like that. Oh, anyway, so, but, you know, over the years, we've lost, like, almost every teaspoon in our set. Where did they go? I mean, this is driving me crazy. I mean, did the kids throw them away? Did they take them to school? Did you have this problem? This, all the teaspoons are gone. So I've been going online on eBay. I'm crazy about, you know, because I like this, you know, it's our flatware. It's stainless steel, so it's not silverware. But I've been going on eBay paying like $15 for a teaspoon. You know, and I'm going broke trying to, I want to restore our flatware. Is that so wrong?
Not at all. I have hauled a lot of flatware, a lot of silver out of the garbage.
Who's been putting it in there? That's what I want.
Kids.
Why would they do that?
Dump the plate after they eat. Everything on it goes in the garbage.
But the kids never throw anything away. They never dumped a plate in their life.
Oh, mine did. Mine did.
Yeah, mine didn't. That's what I can't figure. So it's costing me like 50. So far I got two spoons and two forks for a grand total of $60. The whole thing would cost $80, you know, about the whole. All right, so. Got me off on here now. Okay. And here, look at this here. How old are chopsticks? All right. Not to change the subject, slightly. What does that even mean? How old are chopsticks? Doesn't it depend on the chopsticks? Some chopsticks would be older than others, I would. Deb George from Mount Vernon, Iowa. That's you? Okay. What is the meaning of your question? Is that something, an icebreaker for you, too? How old are your chopsticks?
How long have they been around? How long have chopsticks been around?
How long have they been around, and how would I know that?
Well, I thought you might guess. You know, kind of a...
I don't know.
Guess.
I don't know. Thousands. How old is Chinese civilization?
So it's about 3,000 years. We looked it up on the phone.
Why did you even ask if you knew? Is it an icebreaker?
Just thought it was a fun question.
Well, it wasn't, though, really. I mean, how old are chopsticks? It doesn't even...
Place the fork. They used forks and then switched to chopsticks at the Shang Dynasty.
Well, this is fascinating. I'd love to sit here and talk with you about the rest of this, but let me ask you this. What's your favorite utensil?
Fork.
Okay, interesting. I think almost everyone says fork. Would you say fork, too?
No.
What did you say?
Spoon.
Oh. Table or tea?
Table. Then you get more.
Thank you. Very good answer. I'll buy that. Okay. All right, let's get out of the whole utensil thing. It's going nowhere. John, you want to say anything? No. Okay. John doesn't even use utensils. He's a finger eater. Hey, Michael, are you a hipster?
You betcha.
I have ironic detachment. Does that qualify me? Who said this? Rena Komarek, is that right, from Muskegon? So that's just like a hipster to leave early. Guess we weren't hip enough for her. Okay, well, too bad. I thought it might have been one. I think I can't. I'm one of those old hippies, but hippie, hipster doesn't quite, you know. Hipster is more like a beatnik wannabe, isn't it? With fashion sense. Right? Like if you were a beatnik with fashion sense and liked really terrible jury music, then you'd be a hipster, right? As I understand. Is there a hipster here? Are you a hipster? No? Anyone here a hipster can explain it to me? No hipsters?
I've been called a dipster.
Huh?
I've been called a dipster. Or no, that was something else.
You've been called a dipster. Okay, then there's Barbara Cratch. Cratch. Town of Erin. Huh? Oh, that was you. I was talking to you all along, and I didn't know it.
I like the tablespoon.
You like the tablespoon because you get more.
Yes.
Because
because I love soup. I make a lot of soup.
We're not talking about that anymore, Barbara. Well,
okay.
I know you. Do you make a lot? What's your favorite soup to make?
Vegetable.
And what sort of vegetables do you use?
All the things you get from the farmer's market in the fall. It's maybe 15 kinds of vegetables in my vegetable soup.
Yeah, but in the spring, they're pretty old by then.
I put it in the freezer in the fall, and then I take it out.
Well, you make vats of it and you freeze it?
Yes, vats and vats. Yeah. Gallons.
You should eat with a ladle then. I think a soup spoon isn't big enough for you.
Well, that's a good thought.
I have them every so often. But what's interesting about you is that you retired from like three or four different professions. So you're totally retired?
No.
Four different fields?
No, I've just moved on to different careers. So I retire from one and go to another because I like change. Yeah.
So, but you were an attorney? At law?
Yes.
Minister?
Yes.
Which denomination?
Non-denominational. Oh. It's based on Course in Miracles work from Pathways of Light.
Well, that's good. But you're retired from that?
Yes.
Okay. Interior decorator?
Yes. Mainly at nursing homes.
Oh, nice.
Colorful, you know.
Okay. So what are you doing now that you're about to retire from?
I'm an artist now. I started painting in my 60s after I retired from these other careers, and so that's what I'm doing now, and I'm showing my work.
Oh, how excellent. And what sort of art is it?
It's abstract, but I sort of call it abstract, spiritual abstract work, kind of carrying over a little bit from former careers.
From each of those?
Yes.
And the legal, too? Is it a legal motif in there? Abstract, legal?
Well, it's certainly legal.
Thank you very much. And where can we see this art now? Is it?
Well, actually, I'm going to have a show the last weekend in April at Grava Gallery in Milwaukee.
Wonderful. And it's Barbara?
Craich.
Craich. Thank you for getting that right. Thank you very much, Barbara. Okay, there we go. And we discovered her, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Well, I'm sorry. What?
You didn't answer my question.
What was your question?
How many careers do you think you're going to have in your lifetime?
This is it? I'm lucky to have this one.
Well, you're very good at it, so.
Thank you so much.
It's satisfying. Just continue on.
Yes. I'll retire from it and then do it again. That'd be sort of my thing. Keep doing the same thing over and over again in a vicious cycle of karma. Yes. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz, aren't we? Yes,
yep.
We are. Because you didn't get a chance last time, most of you, except for Paul. Hey, Paul. Well, thanks for the applause, but I need someone to raise one of those hands indicating an interest in the You Are the First. Come on over here. Come on down here. I'd like to see that enthusiasm. How are you?
Good.
And you are?
Christy.
Christy, from around here, Christy?
Fitchburg.
Fitchburg, all the way to Fitchburg. We applaud every family. Christy, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
I'm not very smart. I'll learn some things.
Yeah. You want to play the quiz because you're not very smart?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the poorer reasons I've heard, actually, for playing. But I actually, it'll prove you wrong, I bet.
Okay.
Christy, come on. I think she's a lot smarter than she lets on, ladies and gentlemen. Careful on these steps here. They are treacherous. Have a seat right there if you would. Christy, I'll change the water. I'll change your water. I'll give you some fresh water here. Get the fresh water down here. We make our own water here. It's very good. I love it. You gotta get it just right, or it becomes a poisonous gas. Hey, Christy. So what field or activity are you in these days?
Well, I'm retired, but...
Everyone's retired here.
I worked on the university campus in a lot of the different libraries.
Oh, you did? Are you a librarian? Or?
No.
No. What were you doing in the library then? Just hanging around? One of those people hangs around libraries?
I was library support staff, so oh. I catalog books and
on the UW campus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
The last was in the undergraduate library, and they really keep you stepping.
They keep you stepping over what?
Over them.
Yeah.
And their questions.
The stacks. Just, they say the stacks are haunted at the Memorial Library.
They are.
Do you ever see any ghosts in the stacks?
Well, a long time ago, somebody in the theater program made a movie called Axe in the Stacks.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh, that's
they,
probably.
That's when they took the fire axes out because somebody did attack someone.
Okay. Well, graduate school is not easy. Spend a lot of time in the stacks, and it's very easy to lose your mind and grab a fire axe.
Plus, so that, they do a lot of other things in the stacks.
Oh, did you actually see any of that?
I didn't, but one of the security officers did, and they had no idea he saw them.
Oh, gosh. Was that for credit, you think, they were doing it?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, the stacks, they're magical. That's one of the legends of Madison campus. The other one is the guy who lives in the steam tunnels.
They won't let him anymore.
They won't?
They kind of hired him once to change the light bulbs because he knew all the tunnels.
They hired him to change the light bulbs in the tunnels?
Mm-hmm, because he was always down there.
Yeah.
But then his behavior, he was like started getting really belligerent towards people. And so they,
yeah,
he's kind of, he can't come into a lot of the different libraries.
Is he still in the steam tunnels, though?
I don't know.
Yeah. Because I haven't seen him. Once in a while, you'd see him once in a while. He'd surface in a library or something like
he's
that.
He's very tall. Yeah, you couldn't miss him.
Yeah. The tunnels must be larger than we imagine tunnels being, because he was a tall guy, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah, he probably crouched.
What?
Crouched.
Oh, okay, he crouched. Well, that's interesting. Anything else we should talk about here? UW legends?
No.
They all seem to center on the library at some point.
Well, that's all I know.
Okay, let's go.
The libraries.
Christy, you know this quiz work? Someone out there plays along with you, and
they're going to lose. I'll let them pick all the answers.
We got you're going to be. You've been in libraries, for so
knowledge.
You absorb a lot of that osmosis, even.
Mm-hmm.
Get a lot of that stuff. So you'll be good. What? How do we do this then, Sarah Nix?
Hold the phone. This is an encore edition of What Do You Know? So save your call for a future quiz.
Here's the question then that you mentioned there. How many officially sanctioned hairstyles are there for North Korean women is the question. Within how many hairstyles should this be?
Five.
Okay. Well, how many officially sanctioned hairstyles for North Korean women are there? I'll tell you that there are 10 for men. But for women, I'm not saying that there are a certain number or not. But you got to tell me that. How many officially sanctioned hairstyles for North Korean women? Let's go to Patrick, St. Mary's, Kansas.
Yes.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, hello.
How's it going out there?
It's raining a little bit.
Is it?
But for the young lady who said to come to Kansas
yes.
for mediocre weather, she shouldn't. It's no. either one or the other.
It's one or the other. It's
extreme.
It's extremes, okay.
Yes, sir.
Not mediocre weather, but it's in between, medium, median. Or
well, it's temperate. In between too hot or too cold.
And right now, what is it?
Oh, it's actually fine. It's fine for about a week or so here.
Okay, so it's actually fine right now. So if you're coming...
Tell it to move here now.
Come right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then leave before it changes.
Yes.
Okay, I got you. Patrick, how many officially sanctioned hairstyles are there for North Korean women?
I really don't know. I would guess maybe 75.
Oh, no. Oh, you...
Too
no.
many?
No. Yeah, way high.
Oh.
Sorry, man.
Oh, sorry.
Try us again.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
In Lancaster, Wisconsin, Bill's on the line. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Yourself?
No, just picking eggs.
You're what?
Picking eggs.
Oh, picking eggs. Okay, I thought you said something else entirely. And how's that going?
Oh, got to pick about 8,000 a day.
Oh, you're picking 8,000 eggs a day?
Yeah.
That's from one chicken?
No.
That's unbelievable. That's a record-setting chicken.
No.
So you work
one per chicken per day.
Are you working at an egg farm there?
Well, I own the egg farm.
Oh, you own the egg farm. Okay, so you're to blame for all this.
I am.
Okay.
Well, my father-in-law is, but let's not get into that.
No, that's... You're right, let's not. Well, let's change the subject entirely. How many officially sanctioned hairstyles are there for North Korean women?
Did you say the last guy was high or low?
I said he was high.
He is high.
Yeah, he was really high.
Oh, 20?
18. You qualify, Bill. Put that egg down. Just set that egg down for a minute. Someplace it'll be comfortable. And can you do this while you're working and picking eggs and stuff?
Actually, I just walked away. I'll let the chickens tend to themselves for now.
Are you in the hen house right now?
I'm in the egg room.
The egg room.
Yes.
Modern times. Instead of hen houses, we have egg rooms.
Well, the egg room is between the hen houses.
Okay. I always said that. It's one of my sayings. Bill, this is Christy, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
And you are a team right now, so rely on one another. That's all I can tell you. And we have various categories, don't we, Sarah Nix?
We do. They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention.
Are you chewing gum?
No.
Okay.
I'll start again. Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention.
I thought you were chewing gum.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Science and odds and ends.
I'd make you spit it out. I used to be a teacher, you know, into my hand. That's the weirdest thing that the teachers do, you know, when they make you spit it into their hand. I mean, what is that about? Isn't it? Think about it. Don't think about it. Even better. Bill, you take the first pick. What would you like?
I'll do current events.
Current events right out of the news, yes. Wisdom. The albatross has hatched a new chick at what age? This made news all over. This is the world's oldest bird that we know of, actually. But she just had a chick. At what age is Wisdom the albatross?
Well, this should be right up my alley regarding eggs.
Yeah, it should be.
Unfortunately, I don't have albatross.
No, you should try albatross farming next time. See if
I'll do that in the next life.
Yeah, see if your father will go in for that.
Boy, I don't know. You got a guess?
I'll say 25.
Oh, that's low. This is an old bird.
I think these birds live a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like
I'll let you rethink that. Talk to Bill. And Bill.
Yeah, okay. So if it's like parrots, they really do. They'll live longer than you do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll say...
They'll outlive your wood stack.
I'll say 120.
Well, that's really going crazy, though.
How about 75?
Well, even that's sort of high. I mean, for a bird. We're talking birds here. The albatross.
It must be between 25 and 75.
Can we agree on something here? I mean, I'm not trying to... What?
50.
Well, you know, 50. Anyone can do 50. I could do 50 65. Standing on my head. If I recall, I did do 50 standing on my head. What?
65?
Okay. Now we can accept that, can't we? 62?
Sure.
65? Yes, that's right. 62 years old and just had a chick. Isn't that amazing? That's really something. She's at Midway Atoll National Wildlife Refuge.
I knew it all along.
Huh?
I knew it all along.
Yeah, yeah. What's the oldest hen you got there, you think, Bill?
Well,
you got to get rid of them.
I don't know if I can name names, but my barn is... I have eggs for Organic Valley, and we have to cycle the birds every year.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
So the oldest my birds get to is about a year and a quarter.
Year and a quarter. Okay, just short of this albatross. And what do we got left there?
Well, that would be one right and zero wrong. And the categories left are people, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Christy?
What you should have learned in school.
What you should have learned in school. Name a majority of the seven seas. They're oceans, actually, you know.
The majority?
Yeah, they're not sea. It's actually the seven oceans, but it doesn't sound as good. So, if you can name them.
Atlantic, Pacific.
Okay.
Arctic, Antarctic.
Okay, how many is that? Four?
That's three.
No, Atlantic, Pacific,
Caribbean.
Arctic, Antarctic. That's four.
Indian?
Oh, we only need...
Indian? Okay, stop. You can stop now. Good, that's good. Also, well... That's pretty much it. They divide the Atlantic and North Atlantic, South Atlantic, and the Pacific same way. So,
that's two right and zero wrong.
Yeah, they're doing great.
Yeah.
Doing great.
And the categories remaining are people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Bill, what would you like?
Science.
Science, okay.
Bill, that's not good for me.
No, I'm okay at it, so we'll see how it works.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. The great animal swap after the Isthmus of Panama uplift 2.6 million years ago. That Isthmus of Panama just uplifted from wherever it was. Oh. Yeah, caused a migration. And some of the animals in the south went north. Some of the animals in North America went to South America, okay, on that land thing that was there all of a sudden. So what I want to know is, did the armadillos and the giant sloths go north or south, while the horses, dogs, and cats, did they go south or north? So this is kind of confusing. Right.
Two-part question?
No, they went one way or the other. Okay. So the armadillos and giant sloths, did they move from the south to the north? Or from the north to the south?
I would think.
You would think what?
That they moved north. They're kind of slow moving.
Bill, you know that? So, and then you think that the horses, cats, and dogs moved from the north to the south, South America. Yes?
Yes.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Right on the money. Oh, wow. See? I'm telling you, Chrissy. You got a knack for this. You have a knack for this.
They have won.
Yes, they have.
They could risk it all, however, and go for the mother load.
They could, however?
Yeah.
Well, what's entailed there?
Well, they could go home with a nice selection of prizes, or if they get one more question right, they could go home with a larger selection of prizes.
That sounds good.
Like the whole giant
shebang?
Shebang,
yeah.
Yes, the whole shebang, we're calling it now. You want to go on?
Oh,
I'm
I
in
do.
Farming. I'm all about risk.
Okay, so they're going on. Let's encourage them just a little bit here, because it sounds good. That's right. And what's left there, Sarah?
People, places, or odds and ends?
People, places, odds and ends?
Mm-hmm. I'll do odds and ends because it reminds me of a joke.
Is it one we can tell?
Partially.
Okay. Well, just save it. We got it. All right, here's the odds and ends. What's 9 foot tall at the shoulders and used to live in the Yukon 3.5 million years ago?
Oh, in the news. Bigfoot?
Let me rephrase this. What's 9 foot tall at the shoulders and used to live in the Yukon 3.5 million years ago? They just discovered this, made the news all over, because you wouldn't associate the particular animal with the northern Yukon climate. Rather large. No, it's not an armadillo, John. Stay out of this. Big
horse. That's an eye. That's hands, not feet.
Yeah, 9 foot at the shoulder. Bigger than the modern ones, I think, here. That you see, you know, entirely different climate. Still lumbering
camels?
Along. What?
Camels?
Did you say camel?
I did say camel.
You said camels.
He said camels?
Yeah.
If it's the right answer, I go with it.
You don't smoke. Okay, all right. Now I'm getting jokes from you. Camels?
Yeah.
Is it possible? Yes, 9 foot tall camels in the Arctic. Right. Only in the Yukon. What have they won?
Christy, prepare yourself for the hottest sensation to fly through the air, the fabulous slingshot flying monkey. Just place him on your phone. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Very special thanks to our guests, Ben Yagoda and Lars Mitting. I'm Sarah Nix, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know?
PRI, Public Radio International.